How are humans like God? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author, and we're beginning a new 13-week series on the covenants in the Bible. My conversation partners throughout this quarter are Professor Emeritus of Theology, Dr. Alden Thompson, and Sean Carpenter, who currently teaches contract classes for us in the School of Theology here at Walla Walla University. And I'd like to introduce both of my colleagues a little bit more here. Dr. Thompson was actually one of my teachers here at the university decades ago, and I think is one of the longest tenured professors at Walla Walla, and has left a mark as a gifted scholar and writer in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and we've been blessed by his ministry. And Sean, you and I have had a chance to go cycling together some, and you did your theological undergraduate training here at Walla Walla, and then you went and got a master's. Tell me a little bit about your master's degree.
I did, but first I should say that I spent quite a bit of time with Dr. Thompson as well. I have great memories of him, and one of my most cherished books, a real book, not an electronic book, on my bookshelf, was written by him. So it's really exciting to be able to have this conversation. Okay, so back to your question.
So your master's degree is in what field?
So my master's is in religion, and more specifically in missions. And one of the things that I was really excited about was looking at how God influenced people throughout the Bible. And so I looked at groups and how God influenced groups and how people came to God.
Wonderful. And I know that you're also heavily invested in music. You teach guitar, and you and your wife together have led young people in music, and you lead worship here at the University Church, and we're grateful for those ministries that you're involved in. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today. Most people who listen to The Good Word, I think, are used to hearing Dr. Thompson's voice here, but Sean, you're new, so I'm glad we could introduce you here. And I'm grateful that you both are here with me to have this conversation. Back to our opening question, how are humans like God? What are some of the ways, when we read the book of Genesis, it says that humans were created in the image of God. What does that say to you? Where would we draw the line? Where would we say, okay, here's how we're like God, and here's maybe ways that we're just not?
Well, God is a notch above anything we can imagine. So we're clearly, he made us in his image, which means that there are points of contact, but not in such a way that we ever take his place or threaten his place.
It almost feels blasphemous in some ways to push too hard on this, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sean, some ideas.
You know, I was thinking about every time I start to wonder if God exists, the first thing I come back to is my emotional core and how I'm a being who can experience this variety of emotions. And I think God created us as emotional beings because he recognized that this is so much the essence of what life is. And I think that that's one of the neatest things that we can share with God.
When you look at Scripture, do you see the emotions of God coming out?
Oh, yes.
Do you ever have images of God? I think we enjoy laughter and we enjoy joy. Do you see God taking joy in anything that humans could relate to? Do you see God becoming angry ever? Do you see God showing love and compassion? And do you see God showing frustration? I know we're bordering on the line of blasphemy if we try and say anthropomorphize God too much.
Yeah.
But does Scripture paint God that way? Does it show him as an emotional?
Well, I don't think we can talk about God except in anthropomorphic forms. So all of those emotions, I mean, you can read the stories of the Bible, especially the Old Testament, and they are very vivid. God laughs, he weeps, gets angry, And of course, if you go to the New Testament and understand that Jesus is God incarnate, then you have another whole spectrum of emotions that are, and Jesus did get angry, although that was rarely the case, but he did get angry. But he was very careful about dealing with children. And so I think that we're stuck, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but stuck in thinking about God in human terms.
It is our only experience.
Sure.
And it's the language we have to use.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that was the thought that was coming to me, in fact, was the whole idea that when we think about God, we only have the experience of humans. And so anthropomorphizing the characteristics of God, as long as we recognize that our image of God, our view of God is limited, then probably these human images are the most helpful for us. To the extent that we recognize that there is a certain part of God that is beyond the human experience.
Certainly so. The quarterly, this quarter is taking us into this concept of covenant, but it begins this topical study. We might almost call it a doctrinal study in the book of Genesis. And when we read through Genesis 1 and we see the narrative of the days of creation listed there, the one that the quarterly focuses on is, of course, day 6 in the creation of humans. And it says that God made humankind, Adam, the name for humans as a whole, in his image. And yet then it says he made them male and female. To what degree then does it need a maleness and femaleness to have the image of God? Can we have the image of God if we have just a man or just a woman? Is there something about that that's necessary?
Yes.
You say that with some excitement.
I'm listening to your question, and I'm excited about it. my favorite verse is the one, and now I'm having trouble quoting where this is from, but the one about God being like a hen over its chicks. There is a number of texts in the Bible that definitely have a feminineness to them, and I worry that by focusing on just the maleness of God alone, I worry that we put him, you know, we talked about anthropomorphizing God and putting him into a human box. And I think my fear is that we can do that. We can put him into this box by saying that he's this very male figure that is what we see as male. So,
yeah, to represent then the character of God, you need both biological genders, if we want to speak from what we would call binary terms, I think, but that the text of Genesis says God created them, that is mankind, male and female, and he doesn't give us a way of saying that God is just one of the two. You have to have the two genders, in a sense, to really show the whole character of God.
And language can be a curious thing. For example, if you go to John, the word logos in Greek is masculine. But if you go to French, then it is feminine.
Feminine, yeah.
And the Germans have a great word, too, which helps to bring the two together. Instead of brothers and sisters, they have one word that covers everything, Geschwister. Liebe Geschwister. That means it's men and women. See?
All together.
All together.
I walk into a room nowadays and I'll say, how are you guys doing? And I need to be careful about that, right? Because that's not an appropriate phrase to use if there's ladies present. And yet, most of them say, oh, it doesn't really matter. We know it's inclusive. And yet, our language can be difficult.
Can I just, sorry to cut you off, but here's my first beef I have. I told you I have some beefs. I think that we need to legalize the word y'all.
Y'all. Well,
y'all.
We did that y'all. In Alaska. You yeah. think Alaska's a long ways from the south, but we use y'all up there. And the Greek was great about this. And the Hebrew, too, mm-hmm. they could have a plural that included everyone without gender, right? And that's, I think that's significant. When we think about the creation of the world and how God made the world and the earth, as we read through Genesis 1, when God comes to the end of creating humankind, he looks at mankind and he says, wow, it's very good. Mm. Every other day was just tov. It was good in the Hebrew tov. But when he comes to the last day of creation, he makes mankind and puts it all together. He says, look, now it's really good. This is amazing. And it's like the capstone of creation. And then we know that God rests. And yet the beautiful narratives of Genesis 1 and 2 that give us these pictures, I guess we could call them, they're almost archetypal stories, you know, archetypical stories of creation. They end up being shattered on the rocks of despair almost in chapter 3. Right, we see that after God creates man and woman, and that they choose to walk away from his beauty and his perfection and his holiness in creation, and in a way, God's command to not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil foreshadows what's to come. Right, they eat it for different reasons, we believe, and something changes in humanity. There's a passage in Patriarchs and Prophets that's meaningful to me on page 595, where Ellen White says it this way: the true object of education is to restore the image of God in the soul. In the beginning, God created man in his own likeness. He endowed him with noble qualities. His mind was well balanced, and all the powers of his being were harmonious. But the fall and its effects have perverted these gifts. Sin has marred and well nigh obliterated the image of God in man. It was to restore this image that the plan of salvation was devised, and a life of probation was granted to man. To bring him back to the perfection in which he was first created is the great object of life, the object that underlies every other. And we all might almost say it's the great object of the covenants, right? To bring man back into relationship with God and to restore that image. How a question about this whole passage in chapter 3 that we don't have time to read through really, but how do God's actions in Genesis 3 after the Adam and Eve eat the tree, how does it reveal his character, his desire to be in a relationship with his people? What do we see God doing after they eat the fruit that shows his...
Well, he doesn't come in, you know, like a roaring lion. He simply comes in, goes for a walk. Adam and Eve, where are you? And I think this very gentle approach, they had a guilty conscience. They went and hid. But as far as God was concerned, he was simply walking in the cool of the day and was looking for his friends.
And in the end, they don't accept it as a beautiful gesture. They hide even further, don't they?
Right.
So I struggled finding a great answer to this question, but my mind wandered back as I was thinking about our great heavenly parent, God, and how God is to us. And I remembered when I went home, when I was in college, and my mom would meet me at my car as I was leaving to go back to college, and she would always slip a $50 bill into my hands. And I'll tell you what made me think of that incident that happened over and over again was the part where God makes them clothes. They could have figured out how to make clothes.
They tried. They tried using fig leaves.
Well, they did. Okay.
And it didn't
work
really well.
Maybe they needed a little bit of, instruction. But it was this parting gesture of, I'm sending you out now, and you can't live here, kind of like when I got kicked out of the house. And, you know, I think I was kicked out in a loving way. But I think that there's this essence of God saying, I'm sending you out with something special. It's so practical, but it says something about that simple practical thing God does in the sending of them out.
And in a nutshell, that clothing becomes also metaphorical for what we will see later throughout the scriptures of God providing clothing for his people in spiritual ways as well, right? Yeah. Covering over sin. This whole quarter, we'll be looking then at the covenants that really begin with God's relationship with Adam and Eve in the garden and the fall of mankind. And the covenant only has relevance when we see it in this broader perspective. Next week, we're going to look at how the covenant plays out a little further in Genesis. But our time is up for today. My thanks to Alden and to Sean for joining me today. My thanks also to Samuel Schaffner and our whole program engineering team, and to all those of you who are listening in today for The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.